Hello and a very warm welcome to the latest episode of the Jefferson My Drinks podcast, the pod on a mission to normalise 8-team leagues. I'm Pete McManus and today I'm joined by the usual dynamic duo of Ian and H, as well as a special guest, writer for Fantasy Pros, host of the 5-Yard Rush podcast and manager of the FFCC Charity Best Ball Tournament, Adam Murphy. Hello, gents.
Hello.
Hey. Hi, evening. How's it going? Thanks for coming on, Adam.
Thanks. Don't call me Adam. Call me Murph. I genuinely hate my first name with a passion. I think that's the first time I've been called Adam on a podcast in like history. But that's fine. No, I'm joking. I'm sure it's probably come up somewhere. But yeah, no. I typically try not to go by my first name too often. It gets me in trouble every time.
I ticked a box early on. I've been the guest.
All of that research we did to make sure we got the intro right, and I've stuffed it up completely.
Sorry.
I hope you're sorry. No, honestly, it's all good. No, it's a pleasure. Pleasure to be here. Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting a lot of stuff, and especially getting through some rookies and I just love talking fantasy football and listening to the pod. So I'm glad to finally be on and say hi.
Good. It's good to know we've got some listeners. Always good to know. So on today's episode, we're going to park our usual four-quarter format and go rogue, but I will keep an eye on time. So if you're tuning in expecting an hour of entertaining NFL chat, you won't be disappointed. first up, we're going to go to Murph because we've got to find out a little bit about you, mate. And I know we want to hear a little bit more about the charity best ball tournament because we are all for flagging and promoting best ball, so especially charity tournaments. So we'll kick off with you, and then we thought we'd touch on a bit of news, touch on some anything anybody's got on to say on the draft, and then finish with some rookie rankings, having a first look at those. So tell us a bit about you and what you do, mate.
I know, I'm a bit of a boring chap, really. But let's start. I've been playing fantasy football now for 25 years almost now. So the story about me is I actually lived in Florida for 6 years from 2000 to just before 2006. I went to high school and university in Florida, in Orlando. So that's how I got into NFL. So I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. So it's nice to come on. You probably don't get much NFC chat on here because you only ever seem to get AFC fans and you all represent the AFC. So there is this whole other conference that is actually pretty good at winning Super Bowls as well. Don't know if you've heard about that little team, Tampa Bay. You know, they've won a couple of them, which is...
I've been a couple of times. I used to have family in Tampa, so I have my first visit to an NFL ground was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And
what a great stadium it is. Gotta love Ray J.
One of the greats.
Well,
Pete also really loves your owners.
I mean, listen, the owners are great. I mean, listen, they know how to win.
yeah, American football, yeah, I suppose.
Well, listen, they invest in great talent. You know, just because, in the UK, they've got people that just don't know how to enjoy putting together good teams. Like in America, they went out and got Tom Brady, for crying out loud. Like, they know what they're doing. Like, Jason Light.
Yeah, Ronaldo paid for that.
I do look at Tampa and I think, where do they get the money from? And then I look at United and I go, that's where the money comes from.
It pays for. But I mean, like, in terms of, I grew up around it, it's great. And also just stadiums for a pirate ship. Like, you can, with working cannons, like, what more do you want from the stadium?
Yeah, I mean, that is pretty cool.
It's better just these sort of generic domes that just go up and they've got nothing to them anymore. So, I used to go to quite a few games in Tampa. I went to Super Bowl in San Diego where they beat the Raiders. So I'm lucky enough that I went to school with someone whose dad worked for Malcolm Glazer. As a result, Malcolm Glazer actually gave a load of employees tickets and flights and sorted all that. And so my mate asked if I'd come along and said yeah, so I went along and watched that. So watched my team win a Super Bowl, which was incredible.
Raiders are actually really nice guys then.
Yeah, top blokes. Well, I mean, I've never met them, but they seem like top blokes. And they're so being at Super Bowl was great. Watching my team just absolutely destroy it was incredible. Who knew that actually training for a coach who then banking on his old team getting to the Super Bowl the following year and then not changing the playbook one iota to allow them. I mean, that was worth it. Because John Gruden, so the Bucs traded for Gruden. They gave up multiple first-round picks for Gruden. So, like, which is just mad.
Which is nuts when you think about it.
Yeah, trading for a coach, you trade multiple first-round picks. And then they get to the Super Bowl, and it's against his old team, and it's his old offensive coordinator who is in charge, who they gave the job to, Bill Callahan. So they literally just didn't change the playbook. So they just knew all the calls. You're just sitting there like, you got, you know, four defensive touchdowns in that game, which is just mad for a Super Bowl. So, yeah. I mean, it was great. I loved it. But I can see
which team was it last year that had an opportunity to trade the head coach but didn't know how?
Oh, that's a good
the question. Titans with Mike
Vrabel.
Oh,
Vrabel, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, we wanted to trade him, but we didn't know how.
How did you not know how to trade? You just put it on a form.
I think it was more to do with they didn't want the complication of it all. They said it'd just be easier to get rid of him. And to be fair, with him leaving, like, he's not picked up a new head coaching job anywhere, so it was kind of the right call anyway.
Well,
I'm pretty confident the Titans just don't know what they're doing, so I've come to that conclusion over the last few years.
Well, they must be doing something right, because they've signed Tyler Boyd today.
Yeah, again, don't know what they're doing.
I'm devastated about that.
Why? You love Tyler Boyd.
I do love Tyler Boyd. He's a third down monster.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to add to the Titans, really.
I think the only thing it means is they've really given up on Treylon Burks. If they haven't given up on him already,
I really like Treylon Burks, but he just can't stay fit.
Well, I think it's partly can't stay fit, and I think they're just trying to work out that scheme of how best to get Will Levis and Duke Hopkins and get it all working together. The Titans, I think, are going to be a really fascinating team to watch this year because they don't have Derrick Henry to rely on anymore. So now you've got this amalgamation of what are they genuinely going to do? They're going to have to put the ball in Will Levis's hands, and they're going to have to let him throw 30 times a game. And they're just not built for that. They haven't built that roster with that in mind. So well,
haven't they?
What's that?
They've got Calvin Ridley for that, though, haven't they?
Yeah. I mean, they've got Ridley. They've got a lot of on-paper talent. But I'm not sure that they all fit to a specific scheme.
No.
Like, you've got Nuke Hopkins. It's like what Chicago have done. But Chicago have gone well off the reservation. Where they just thought, I know what we're going to do. We're just going to stockpile with all of this talent and we'll work it out later. And again, it doesn't scream of like, there is a plan here of what is going to happen. It's like, what we're going to do is we're just going to amalgamate all of this talent and hope that it kind of just comes together. And I think it's going to be fascinating. Like, at least we're going to get to see the Bears over here, and we'll see how that works come like week six or something when they're over.
Yeah. Has that been officially announced yet?
We know that it's the Bears.
Yeah, the Bears, the Vikings, and the Jags in the UK games.
I saw a rumor today it was going to be Jags, Bears, and then.
Yeah.
They were going to do what they did last year and have the Jags play week back to back.
And then Jags, Browns.
Yeah.
And then the other rumor was, and this can't happen, is Texans.
Texans. What do you mean it can't happen?
It can't happen because it's an NFC home team. So it's NFC and NFC teams. Because when they put the game into the schedule, it has to be two NFC teams. So the Vikings can't play the Texans. It has to be an NFC team. Now, I would say it's probably going to be the Cardinals, but we'll see what happens.
Pete, you got to be interested in that.
Kyler?
I'm back in on the Cardinals.
Kyler, live.
I'm back in on the Cardinals.
So, I had an unhealthy obsession with Kyler Murray for about 2 years, and then I finally gave it up last year. And now they've drafted Marv. I'm back in on it. So bring on the Cardinals.
Oh, you're so brave about it.
Tell us a bit about your podcast for anyone who doesn't listen.
Sure. 5 Yard Rush podcast. So we are, I checked the other day, about 810 episodes in now.
We've got catching up to do.
It's been going for a while, 7 and a bit years. So my mate Stock started it, and it was a review into his league that I wasn't in. And then he came and joined my home league, and we hit it off. And he started it with a mate, and his mate got busy and couldn't do it anymore. So I started guesting, and then I just kind of came on and then just never left.
Like,
yeah, so I just, and that was, yes, over 7 years ago. We just did it just to talk and then talk about fantasy football and strategy. And then people just started coming on. So like we started off with Mike Tagliere was one of the first people. Marcus Grant was one of the first people on. Okay. And all these people were just like, yeah, we'll come on and chat. And everyone was like, this is just so easy. Like, how does this happen? Like, you literally just message someone, hey, do you mind coming on the podcast? Yeah, sure, we'll come on and talk. And then, like, before you know it, we've had Scott Hansen's been on. We've had Michael Lombardi. Yeah, exactly. And it's just, we went through a spate where we just got loads and loads of amazing people. We've had Brad Johnson was on, you know, like for me, that was like proper fanboy moment, right? And then it was great. We had, and we just talk about fantasy strategy. And like for me, the podcast has always been, when we started it and like we got into it, my whole mantra was 7-8 years ago, people, when they played fantasy football, didn't have enough mates to form a proper league. So what happened was people would join those stupid random NFL.com leagues.
Yeah.
And then like you draft, and the draft's all right. That's quite active. And you get to like 2 weeks in, and then like it's just completely gone off a boil, and no one's playing anymore. So yeah. I was like, my whole mission was we need to end, completely obliterate the need for people in the UK to play on random NFL.com leagues. And if I have to set up 100 leagues so that this happens, that is what I'll do. And so that is, it wasn't quite 100, but that's what we did. And then, you know, there wasn't so much, there was a bit of a community online, but it was more about the games. I think there was a bit less about fantasy. There was a few fantasy people, Jack Humphrey in particular was sort of, you know, in the fantasy game and doing a lot in that time. And we just thought we just need to get people together. Like, we just need to start building this community of fantasy people in the UK who can then splinter off and form their own leagues. And it's not just being, I'm not sitting here saying like, oh, well, I said we're doing this and then this is what happened. Far from it. There were lots of people. There's a guy called Neil Elliott who runs the Facebook group that gets all fantasy people together, and he put a huge fantasy league together. And there's loads of people that have that sort of started this in terms of trying to get people together. And then there's loads since, like Tom Strachan, like Rich Cooling, like loads of people. You know, Matt Cullen, who you've had on, you know, started really helping in building this community. And that's kind of where we are. So like when I look back at it and think, we're now in a state where if you play fantasy football in the UK, you don't never need to play a random NFL.com league, because there is enough leagues run by enough brilliant people. And that probably wasn't the case 7 or 8 years ago. So like if I stop tomorrow, which I don't plan to, then at least I know that the podcast and its mission to help create and form a community and build out people to just be able to connect with one another and play in interesting leagues and play in different leagues and meet people. And then like so many people have taken it further with the UKFFC, and like people have just gone well above and beyond what the realms of what I thought were possible just even 4 or 5 years ago. And I think that's just incredible to see. And like I think it just needed a few of us at that time to just start connecting people with leagues. Yeah. And I think that's how it all kind of started. It just started with meeting other fans. And like for me, playing fantasy football is the best thing you can do. It's the best way to meet people. The amount of mates I've made over the years and friendships that have been born all over the world because I play fantasy football, which is a stupid game of fake football. It's incredible. Like, literally, it's like, my wife doesn't understand it. Like, I'm telling her, like, what do you mean you're going on a podcast with guys you never met, or you go and meet someone? Oh, a funny story. So there's a guy, I went for lunch last week with a guy in the BFFL, and his name's Ben, right? Ben Burridge. Now, I'd never met Ben until a couple of years ago. So, but we were in the same BFFL division, and he'd played my leagues. He's a patron for the podcast and everything. So we talked a lot, but we'd never met. And so I talked about, I was moving house, and I was moving up to where I live, which is outside of Northampton. And then he messaged me to say, oh, by the way, I'm moving to Wellingborough, which is the next town over from where I am. And I'm like, well, okay, well, I'm moving to Earthlingborough, which is where I live, which is about 3-4 miles away. And we literally moved to the same area from completely different parts of the country within a week of each other. So I moved, and like a week later, he moved. And it's just, that's fantasy football for me. It's just so mad. And so now we meet up again for lunches and do the UK FFC. Not this year, unfortunately, but we have gone down together both years. And like, that's just all because of fantasy football. I now have a mate in a town which I knew absolutely no one, and he's 4 miles down the road. And it's purely because of fantasy football. Yeah. So it's just like, it's amazing. And like, that's the power of it. It's just meeting people with a passion. And I think as an NFL fan in the UK, like, you've got to really be committed. I think it's quite hard to be a half-assed fan because games are on late. Yeah, the games are on late. It's not on regular telly. You've got to have like a subscription package of some sort to watch games. Like, you've got to have more than just a fleeting interest in it. I know there's a few that will have fleeting interest in it, but I think most fans I encounter tend to have that kind of real diehard nature of it. And I think that's what's...
Yeah, it's a commitment.
Yeah, it is a commitment. It's a commitment. And I think people, because of that, they recognize other fans who have that commitment. And I think that's why we all kind of just get on, because we're all degenerates. Yeah. Like, we all love this game that's on it. Like, no one else is up at like 1 o'clock on a Monday morning.
Yeah, well, I have to say, at 3:30 the other Friday morning, when I was really contemplating whether I cared who the Cowboys drafted in the first round, I have to agree with you. I was like, you have to be slightly mad to be sat up here waiting to see who these last 6 or 7 teams draft.
Absolutely. You've got to be really mad, like I am, to wait four hours.
Imagine being not one of the draft. Imagine being a UK-based Bills fan.
Trade out.
Yeah,
that's almost as bad as drafting a center in the first round. I mean, I love the pick, but you're not exactly like jumping out. You're thinking, yes, 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 we got a starting center for the next 5 years. Like, you're not jumping up and down out your seat for that. Like, as much as he's a great kid, and as much as he's a great fit, and he makes a lot of sense, you're not punching the air. You're not that excited about drafting a center.
So before we move on to your charity best ball, you mentioned obviously you've set up a lot of leagues in the past. Do you know roughly how many dynasty and redraft you do on a yearly basis?
I always get asked this question, and so I honestly genuinely no idea. I think
that's a lot.
I think it's north of 70 and south of 120. And that's what I call weekly setting leagues. So in there, that is your dynasties and redraft. Then you have all the eliminators, all the best balls, which I do for basically like preseason practice, right? So I probably draft 100, 120 best balls.
Yeah.
Purely just for research and just getting, it's like muscle memory. So like, you get to draft season, everyone's like so excited for draft season. It's like, yeah, draft season starts in like March. Like, I'm already like 30 best balls down at this point. So like, I get to the point where it gets to August when you get like the proper home fans that join in with that enthusiasm. It's like, oh, it's my fantasy draft this week. And I get people that message me and they're like, oh, it's my fantasy draft this week. And you're like, oh, cool. Like, I've done 300 at this point. Like, I'm entering a draft like one of my home leagues, which has Adam Rank in it. Literally, It's
that's a big name drop to just brush over there.
It's not my league, so it's a weird one. So these guys listen to my podcast. They had some guys drop out, and they messaged me saying, "Oh, do you want to be in our league?" And I get this a lot, and most of the time I'm like, "Let me think about it." And it's like, "Oh, we got Adam Rank in it." I was like, "Yeah, sure, I'm in." and so it drafts. It's the last draft I do. So it's like right at the end of August. It's the very last draft I pretty much do, barring maybe one or two of our listener leagues that are just wrapping up. And so I get to that draft. And everyone's really excited. They're doing like a draft video. And I'm just like, I'm just auto. I'm like, I just know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing before. Like, it's like muscle memory. It's like, yeah. I genuinely like can't tell you how I drafted in that league. I should have won that league last year. I was leading going up to Sunday night football or Monday night football, and Jordan Love absolutely destroyed me in the final. And I lost by 3 points. I had like a 40-point league going into that, which is Jordan Love to face and lost. So that hurt. So I get to that. Everyone's really excited, and I have to feign excitement. Like, yeah, God, can't wait to draft this. Thinking like, I'm kind of done at this point. Because it is
with that many leagues, I mean, I'm in about 7 or 8 now, and I thought that was getting out of hand. But clearly I've got a long way to go to be anywhere near your level. But with those sort of leagues, do you have like the 2 or 3 that are the most important to you?
To be honest, I just like to win. So yes, yeah. There are some leagues. Leagues that, especially leagues I've not won before, tend to take a precedent. So like for me, the 5-yard rush champion of champions, which is, it's effectively a 2-year league. So I run a load of listener leagues, and they're all different formats. And then once you've done that, if you win that, you win a seat into the champion of champions. So it is literally just all the league winners, the charity league winner, the listener league winners. And then occasionally, because someone might win a couple of leagues, I had a year I won like 4 of them. So I had to bring some second place people in to like make the number up. So the champions of champions is always one. And I won that last year. So finally, I was like, after 3 years, I'd won that. And I was desperate to win that. The UFC one that we talked about off air, that's a big one because that's quite a difficult challenge because you've got to draft 4 times through the season. You change your team every 4 weeks. And I think it's the ultimate test of skill because it's about pivoting as the season pivots and being able to see ahead of time and the strategy that goes into that. So I won that this year, just gone. So again, like they're important to me because I've never won them. Do I have the same importance this year? I'm not so sure. It will definitely be the leagues like I've not won that I will like. So that home league I mentioned with Adam Rank, that'll be one I'm heavily focused on this year because I feel like bitter. Charity leagues get a good amount of focus. So Scottish Bowl and the charity leagues you can control always get a certain amount of attention because you want to do quite well in those. But then it's a strange one. So like, I guess for me, it's also down to who's winning, like which of my teams are winning. So through the season, I might say, right, I'm really focused on these like 6 or 7 leagues. But actually, I can't because I'm drafting in so many leagues. It's kind of, I just want to win them all. So your focus kind of goes into the ones that you're doing extremely well in, and then the ones that you're perhaps not doing as well in. I still put the time and effort to do waiver claims and set lineups and things like that, but you get less excited. So I'm constantly like, I don't know if in Sleeper, do you ever do the managed leagues?
Well, up until, and I know Ian's the same, and I know H, you're getting towards the same. We've only ever really been in 2 or 3 up until last year. It was like, got to 4. So I've never really had to move them around. They're all on the same screen. Whereas now I'm getting to the point where I'm going to start scrolling here. So it's like, you know, we've got a best ball coming up. Once that's drafted, it'll get moved to the bottom. And then I sort of know where my priorities are.
I had to set up a separate Sleeper account for my best balls. Because so I've worked out on Sleeper, if you have over 80 leagues on Sleeper, the performance of the app is significantly worse and it starts to crash and it can't handle like someone having that many leagues. And I spoke to Sleeper about it. So we didn't really design this app in line with someone having this many leagues.
Sleeper thought, no one would be that crazy.
No, I thought that would be that stupid. So I have to have a separate one for best balls on Sleeper. Not the charity ones, but the just the standard ones I do, just like to do some practice and for other people just to get some practice in. So I have a burner best ball account. And then literally I completely forgotten about it and then checked that at the end of the season just to see how many of them hit, because I don't look at them. Literally, I'm logged into my regular season. But yeah, I do manage the league, so I move them up and down depending on like how I'm doing. So like ones at the bottom that like are not much of a focus, they go at the bottom. So at least I know, like with waiver claims, it sets by priority every week.
I've got so many more questions. We could basically spend the whole hour be just asking you questions about your leagues now. But just one more before, and then I will let you talk about the best ball charity tournament. How long does it take you to do waivers on a Tuesday night?
Oh, I don't do them on a Tuesday night. That's the first. So I go through and start them on a Monday. And then I re-go through all of them on a Tuesday, either afternoon, early evening. And then before I get up, or when I get up on the Wednesday morning, I just double check if there's been anything else and then just go through and check them all. So it's a three-tier system.
Is this why you work for an Australian company? Because you haven't got any time in the day? Like, you're too busy.
No, I work British Hours. No, I just, it's one of those things. It sounds mental now I'm saying it out loud, but in my head, it kind of makes sense. And it's kind of one of those things that I restrict the number of platforms I play on. So, like, most of my managed leagues are on Sleeper. I wouldn't say it's my preferred choice of platform, but it is where it is. So you just get into a habit where you can effectively do it without really having to look. And luckily, because Sleeper, they do, like, the most popular waiver picks. It does make it much easier in setting. So, like, I can go through in each league and set all the waivers in, like, 15, 20 seconds that I need to. And then it's only on some of the other platforms I have to take a little bit more time. And yet, occasionally, you do miss out. Occasionally, you do, like, gosh, I forgot to set one for there. But it's very, very rare. It's most of the time I'm pretty on it. Okay. And most of the time, I try and do fab, burn the fab early, and then you don't have to worry about it.
I feel like all three of us are now going to end up in about 20 more leagues than we have to. And then there's just going to be a voice in our head going, well, it's still a lot less than Murph's in. That's going to be my justification for the rest of the summer.
But then we get to Christmas and we're like, Murph has absolutely killed me.
Yeah. I mean,
how am I last in 70 leagues?
That's the thing.
Me and Peter moving in together because we've just lost our families completely.
I think there's a lot less chance of you quitting the pod midway through the season, Ian, if you're in more leagues and therefore our game destroyed.
But like it was going to be last year.
And I think that's half the thing as well, is because I play with so many of our listeners and in the community and I set up lots of leagues, it's also like you can't just half wing it either, because you're sitting there giving fantasy advice and then if you don't take your own advice, you look a bit stupid. So, like, you have to maintain the high standards in all of these leagues. And I genuinely want to win them. Like, for me, it's like, if I can win all of those leagues, I'd be delighted. Like, I always set a target to finish in double digits every year. If I finish in double digits, that's a good season. Double digit wins.
Do you get to the point where you've drafted a certain... Honestly, I'm going to go on with these questions, but to a point where you've drafted a player a certain amount of times and then you start double thinking that because you're like, if this guy has a shocker and I've got him in every team, or do you just trust your belief in him and go for it?
Yeah, so that's where draft position and value goes. So, like, I took a ton of Rashad White last year. Like a stupid amount. I had Rashad White in 42% of my leagues last year. It's my highest owned player because the value on him was just ridiculous. And I'm like, I'm a Bucks fan, so it's cool. I get my running back. And I know they can't run the football. I know they are. But we've changed OCs. So it's never going to be as bad as it has been. There is going to be just a natural regression to the mean, which is a positive regression. And then you sit there and think, okay, but there is literally no one else. So he's only got to run the ball 250-odd times, and he'll smash ADP anyway. Like, regardless, he could be the worst runner in the world. Just that volume alone, he bolts into a top 15 pick. So I'm just sitting there, like, and I just draft him in every league. I had loads of Debo Samuel. And sometimes you just, I can't help it. If the value's there, I just have to. Evan Ingram was another one. Like, these players just fall into you. And I'm just like, I don't care if it's the ninth round and I've got 37 shares of Evan Ingram. I'm just going to do it again. Like, it just, if it works, it works. Like, but then there are some, especially top of the board, I really do think about diversifying the portfolio. So I, God, that sounded really, that sounded really bankery, didn't it?
That's the thing we're going to clip and put on Twitter.
I really like to diversify and think, okay, so if I've got like a certain amount of a running back here, I will probably pivot and go somewhere else just so I'm not overexposed. But I only really focus on that at the top of the board. Low in the board, I don't care. Value's a value. The value's there. Even if he completely tanks, I'll still take the value because you're just mad not to. But at the top of the board where it's not really much of a value. But then I also have players who I have absolutely... So like Garrett Wilson. All of my teams last year, I had not one share of Garrett Wilson. Not one. Didn't exist. I just didn't... I'm not drafting him in the second round. He's not a second round player based on that situation. I was like, oh, it's Aaron Rodgers. Blah, blah, blah. And then look, and I get it. Aaron Rodgers got injured after like 13 seconds. But I don't care. I never liked the value. So like for me, he was never on any of my teams. It just didn't happen. So I just faded him everywhere. And that just kind of happens. If it happens, then it happens. If he was there in the fourth round, I probably would have had some exposure to him. But this is the way it goes.
This is it. If I'd have been in 20 leagues last year, I would have had 18 shares of Alexander Mattison, and that would have been absolutely terrible.
Nobody needs that.
No, nobody, but that's how high I'm. This time last year, that's
how
high I'm. He was
holding on Mattison last year.
Yeah. That didn't go well.
So here's what I would say to put your mind at SP a little bit. I think every year is an opportunity to think about, like, when you evaluate players and, like, where you have them. And I think, genuinely, you have some years where you absolutely crush it. Like, you just absolutely smash it. Like, you have the values on the right players for whatever reason. You could have just, you just like the player, you like the fit, you could have done some analytical analysis, whatever it is. You have certain values on certain players, and it just works. It's just, like, magic, and you've absolutely bossed it. And last year was one of those years for me. Like, I did extremely well last year because there were certain players where everyone was fading and I pivoted away from the consensus and it worked. But the year before, I had an absolute stinker. So I think it's like, if you have one of those years where you've just got so much exposure to someone and it felt and it backfires, like, I think that's fine because you're due. It's like you're due. You'll get it right next year. It doesn't mean that your process was bad. It didn't mean that your method was bad. It's just one of those things. It doesn't work. You never beat yourself up about it. Last year is last year. You take what you can from it. But ultimately, you will have extremely good years in fantasy football and you'll have extremely crap years in fantasy football. And it is all decided in September, effectively. Yes, you can make some pivots. Yes, you can make some trades. You can get some things right. But if you've nailed your strategy before September, you'll have a good year. And you'll give yourself the best opportunity to win. So, like,
I had due quite a few very good years then, based on that.
Mate, this year's going to be a good one, I tell you.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. So, go on, tell us about your FFCC charity best ball.
So, I started the FFCC. This is year six now. So, it stands for the Fantasy Football Challenge Cup. Now, I'm a proper football fan by heart, and I think the FA Cup is one of those competitions that is glorious and brilliant, and I wanted to bring some of that into fantasy football, and I thought, you know what, the best part about fantasy football is the playoffs anyways, so why not just sack off the season and just do a tournament like the American March Madness? So every year up until this year had been 256 teams. So 256 teams all over the world. I get some analysts in, I get some mates in, we get listeners in, we get people from all over the world come and play. And it's best ball, so you draft and that's it. And then basically every round is so it's a predetermined bracket. There's no seedings. It's just literally a random draw. And then that draw, well, it's not to say it's random. It's random when I put the divisions together. So then, like, you end up playing the first three games or the first three matches if you advance or someone in your division because it's easier for you as a player to track, like, who you're playing, what the team is, etc. And then once it shrinks down to, like, the later rounds, you'll be playing out of division. So then, like, you don't have exposure to their team and then it's slightly different. So the idea is that you just basically go through the bracket, you win eight matches, and your crown world champion. So they're two week matchups, best ball. So it's your best points total from week one, added to your best points total in week two, and you hope that you beat the other person. And if you do, you advance. Last year, because I did get people every year going, wait, so I spent all that time, I spent longer drafting than I did in the tournament. and I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. So I did include last year the Intercontinental Plate. It's a fancy title. And basically just all the losers in round one went into the plate, a bit like rugby sevens. Yeah. So all your losers in round one went into the plate, and then you went through and played that out. So you had basically two 128-team tournaments. You had the main event, and then you had the Intercontinental Plate. The winner of the tournament is the world champion. We send them a T-shirt that we get custom made, as well as all our listener leagues. If you win a listener league, you get a custom 5-Yard Rush T-shirt commemorating your win and entry into the Champion of Champions. So they get that. We send them a trophy. And they get entrance into the Scottish Bowl the following year. So, and then we raise money for charity. So every year we've always kind of made this as the 5-Yard Family is a bunch of different writers and podcasters. And so we've always tried to pick a charity that has impacted one of us. So we've raised money for Unique. We've raised money for all sorts of different charities over the years. And this year, we're raising money for Crohn's and Colitis UK, which is actually the largest charity we've ever raised money for. Now, yeah. I got diagnosed with Crohn's with ulcerative colitis at the start of 2023. I spent 45 days in hospital last year. I was chronically very, very ill. And so they've been amazing. Like, to me and my family, have been incredible support. And when I got better, I was like, I need to give something back. It's just my nature, right? If someone's given me something, I kind of like, and it's been like that form of charity, I have to make that right. That's just the type of person I am. So like, for me, I need to raise £5,000-6,000 to Crohn's and Colitis UK as a thank you for all the support they've given me and the tools they've given me to handle my disease. So that's the goal this year. So we're still taking entries. We're over 200 people in. I'm not capping it at 256 this year. I have a crazy idea for over 250. So if we get over 256 people, that's fine. I'll do an eliminator round and I'll come up with something crazy and come up with maybe a third side tournament for all the people that fall out there. So I have some contingencies depending on where we end up. If we get the dream number would be to get to 512. Because then I could basically just do another round of the tournament and that would be easy. But if we don't get to 512, I do have a contingency if we get up north of 256. So
sign up. Sounds like you've got plenty of time to come up with a new way of doing another charity tournament. So
yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's just basically what would happen to get to 256. Yeah. So I have a plan. It's just about, it's just, I have two different plans based on if we finish between 256 and 330 something, and I can't remember what the exact number is, and 330 something north to 500. It's kind of, it would depend how I would do it based on how many people, but it's fine.
So tell our listeners and anybody watching on YouTube how they get involved, because it sounds like they definitely should. I know we're all in, I think, but
so get involved. So on the pinned tweet on @5YardRush on Elon Musk's playground, X, Twitter, whatever it's called nowadays. On the pinned tweet is a link to sign up. So you just sign up there and then fill in the form, add a donation links in the all the kind of rules are there. 22, 24 rounds. It's a super flex, tight end premium with some crazy kicker scoring. So it's good fun. Ultimately you'll get to draft with someone, some really cool people. You'll probably make some new friends in there and you give money to Crohn's and Colitis UK. Now, you know, Crohn's and Colitis affects over 500,000 people in the UK. And unfortunately for those of us on the screen, we're the prime candidates and target for this disease. So, you know, a lot of people our age and even younger than us, are sort of the prime likelihood to get diagnosed with this awful disease. And it's a chronic illness. You know, the only cure is surgery. So you have to manage it for the rest of your life. And so it's a pretty gruesome, horrible disease that strips your dignity and everything else away. So if we raise that money will go towards better education and early detection. And the earlier you get detected, my journey was, I had this for 4 years before it was diagnosed. And had I been diagnosed 4 years previously, I wouldn't have had anywhere near the one, the bad time I've had with it. And two, I'm going to have surgery in the next 12 to 18 months. Like that's a given. So when that happens, like I'm ready for it. That's fine. Made my peace. But it probably never had to come to that. It been diagnosed quicker. So if I can help people get diagnosed quicker through awareness, that's invaluable. So yeah, we raised the money through listener leagues, through the FFCC, which is the big one, and then also the book as well, book sales, which I'm hoping we'll have released at some point in the next month and a bit.
So you'll have to let us know. We'll obviously keep an eye on that and share it with the listeners and stuff. I think, I mean, I'll speak for all three of us when I say well done on everything you're doing to try and raise money for that. As you know, we had Matt Cullen on, and one of the things I've noticed about the fantasy football community in this country, and you talked about earlier about how you sort of brought everybody to, or helped bring everybody together. I think one of the things I've noticed is there's a massive charity element to it. And I think that's, you know, we're all having fun. Everyone's having a laugh. You know, some leagues there's money at stake. Some leagues there's places in the Scottish Bowl and things like that are placed, and everybody wants to win. You know, we're all as competitive. We're all very competitive on this pod. And I know you are, but there's this underlying element of everyone's trying to do some good at the same time. And it's really nice to be a part of.
Yeah. And the trend set by Scott, right? Scott Fish, who started the Scottish Bowl 14 years ago. And the whole goal of that was to make money. And that's a behemoth, right? That's going to be north of 4,000 people this year. Probably that raises hundreds of thousands of dollars. And that was the inspiration for me. The UK didn't have a charity tournament when I started it. So I was like, we got to do something here, because drafting all ends of the night there. And also the Scottish Bowl was exclusive. There weren't that many people in the Scottish Bowl from the UK 5-6 years ago. There was like 3 or 4 or 5 of us, maybe 10. And like now it's great. Now we've got 100 people, maybe more than 100 people. We've got live drafts here for the Scottish Bowl, which is incredible. That wasn't the case a few years ago. And I thought if we could just do something here, similar story. And I think, you know, and I speak probably for all of us without education here, we're quite blessed in our own ways. You know, we're all better off than the average person in some form, whether it's support, network, family, job, etc. And I think we just have a social responsibility to give back to those that are less fortunate. And if you find a cause that means something to you, you know, raising 50 quid, 100 quid, 200 quid, it's just going to make all the difference. Especially COVID destroyed these smaller charities. You know, we raised a load of money for a charity last year, and like they were so touched because they'd been forgotten about because of COVID, and it was like that was such a big thing. And so I think that's what's really key is just we're in this advantageous position where we play fake football, chuck a quid or two or whatever you can to charity and make a difference. And you know, some people can run marathons. I run fantasy football leagues. Like, clearly, it's not as heroic or as glamorous, but it's what I can do. And, you know, don't let that be the limit to you raising some money for charity and giving back.
No, I watched a lot. Totally Go on, Ian, sorry.
No, I totally agree. Love it.
Yeah. And I watched a lot of people struggle to run the marathon the other week. We're all better off just sitting here at our computers, playing fantasy football and throwing a bit of money to charity, if you ask me.
100%. And listen, those people who run the marathon, like, you have my greatest respect. I'm not knocking it in the slightest. I'm just sticking my hand up and saying, that ain't for me. I can't do it.
Yeah.
No, I'm the same. Like, I'm one of those where if you put a ball in front of me, I'll chase that all day.
Yeah.
Put me on a road and just tell me to run. There's no chance.
No.
I'm stopping at the first KFC I find. And you can pick me up on the way home.
100%.
And I think, maybe someone could design a KFC run for you. So.
There we go.
Well, right. Although it's off topic, but a few years ago, I did the Manchester to Blackpool bike ride for charity. And I finished in 3 hours 52. That's and I had a mate that did it with me. It was 64 miles. And a mate that did it with me, he's a big guy. And I phoned him when I got to the finish line. I said, where are you? He said, I'm at McDonald's in Preston.
I was with him.
It took him over 8 hours to finish it. Not his meal, my ride.
Brilliant. See, not all heroes wear capes.
No, but he finished. He finished.
And yeah, that's it. That's what matters.
What achievement.
Yeah.
Pete, you mentioned you've got another book coming out there.
Yeah, I'm working on. So I've written 3 versions of the Fantasy Football Playbook, which you can find on Amazon. But to be honest, some of them are a bit dated. So if you do want a copy, just drop me a message at 5-Yard Rush, and I'll send you a PDF version of it. But if you like the hard copies, they are there on Amazon. And basically, like, these strategy guides are out there, and some of my mates write them. Like, I like the fact that they're actionable in the sense of. They give you like a list and like, here's how I rank all these players and I rank them from here to here and here's my formula and here's how I do it. And like, that's all great, but no one actually tells people how to play fantasy football and get better at it from a strategy perspective. So yes, I can go and read a list of names and say, I'm going to draft this person here because Adam Rank has told me to draft this person. But does that actually make you a better fantasy football player, or does that just make you good at research? So I've written these guides. And maybe they kind of age. I don't really know. But effectively, like for me, it's about the game within the game. How do you get an edge over your opponent? How do you get to some of the topics in them are like how to get an edge on draft day if you do an in-day draft. How do you like put rankings together, like in a really easy way all the way through to a more complicated way? How to play different formats, trends that are happening. The book this year is looking at the decline of elite running back performance. And so I've always advocated you take running backs early because they're scarce and they're league winners. And actually this pool is getting scarce and scarce and breaking it out. A metric about streaming, what positions you need to stream versus what positions you don't need to stream. And so I put that together every year. I'm working on it now. I'm about 3/4 of the way through. I'd like to have been finished by now, but life gets in the way. So I don't put as much pressure on myself as perhaps I did when I wrote the first 3. I took a break last year, so I haven't written one for basically like 2 years. So, but it will be out hopefully towards the middle of June. Self-published, but all proceeds of that goes towards Crohn's Colitis UK as well as also funding and keeping the lights on for some of our leagues and some of the prizes that we give away. So if you want to play any of our listener leagues or charity leagues or copies of the book, just get in touch with me at 5-Yard Rush because my old handle, I deactivated for a bit and now it's disappeared into the ether. So it's like dead forever, apparently.
Yeah.
So just get in touch there and we can hook you up. But I do lots of cool, interesting leagues from your very simple standard leagues all the way up to really cool formats and lots of how-to, like coaching. And if you've never played fantasy football before, but you listen to this podcast, get in touch as well. I do a rookie league as well for people who've never played before.
I know some people who listen to this podcast and they think they've played fantasy football before, but they haven't. They've got to still leave the advice. You know, having never won anything, I don't know who I'm talking about. But that's great, mate. You have to let us know when it's out.
No, I will do. I'll send you all a copy and you can either. Ian's got copies of the old one as well, so you can share those with you. And
I have, and they're a really good read. The metrics that go into it. I had to read them like two or three times because it just blew my mind, the level of detail that you went into. And it's all very useful stuff as well.
Thanks. The way I look at it, right, is you read those and you won't use everything, right? And you won't use everything all at once. But it's just there to like occasionally go back and flick about and think, oh, I'm now in an auction league. I've never done that before. And I can go back and read about how to do an auction. And that might be of no interest to you when you buy it. But 3 years from now, that might be of interest and it's there. And the idea is it kind of doesn't age. The principles of fantasy football don't change. It's only trends that change. So I try and highlight the trends. That's why it changes every year and then come up with different pieces. But the idea is you can put it all together and you've got a strategy guide. And it's not about me telling you how to play fantasy football because it's not really about that. It's about you developing your own strategy based on the evidence that I present to you and how you gleam it. You build your own strategy. So people who have bought those books and played with me for years and listened to my content have got to this point now where they've actually gatewayed away and thrashed me in fantasy football because they've taken what I've done and then elevated it further and become a lot better at it than I have. And that's great. And that's kind of what I want. Like, so it's good. Like you let people develop their own strategies based off what you're giving like it's that whole teach a man a fish and never go hungry kind of perspective. That's kind of how I visit the advice, rather than me just telling you, pick this guy and here's why. That doesn't kind of whet my appetite as much.
No, but the books are really useful for anyone who's new to fantasy football, because Murph puts a guide together on all the different formats. So if you just manage to find yourself in perhaps a tight end premium league, Murph's guide has what tight end premium even means and how to maybe draft or how to think about approaching that league. So even if you're brand new to fantasy football, the books are definitely worth a read.
Appreciate that. That's the idea.
So, go on, Pete.
No, I've interrupted you, mate. Carry on.
Right. You mentioned earlier that you draft based on value.
Yeah.
Going into this season, without telling us all of your strategies, is there a single player that you're really interested in terms of value?
So I don't really zero in on a single player. So, like, for me, I think ADPs are really interesting, right? So I try not to draft off ADP too much. I feel like that just makes it really predictable who you're going to take and what you're going to do. But what they do is they do tell you what the trend in the market is, and they change. So if you draft now in leagues, and it's mostly like dynasty startups, etc., the values are very, very different to the values of players in, say, June, when your veterans will shoot up boards because people want the new hotness. Marv will probably be a first-round player in a dynasty startup, which I think is mad, but that's how people like to play the game. Who am I to sit here and quibble how people want to play? They can do whatever they like. So I kind of wait until like late May, June, before I sort of start getting into this sort of values basis of players that I look at. But I look at players who I think are going to be criminally undervalued, and I want to get some of that. I think the uncertainty in San Francisco. So rather than give you one, I'll give you a few. That uncertainty in San Francisco makes Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk interesting to me, because people don't know who's going to get traded out of those two, because one of them will, right? And I kind of like the fact that it is a gamble, because if they get traded and go to a poor situation, it is a bit of a burn, but their price has come down so much.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm quite intrigued to see where they land. So I think that's a really interesting duo for me. I think Chris Godwin is insanely undervalued because he hasn't produced for a couple of years due to injury and scheme. This fit scheme fit with Leon Cohen. Leon Cohen, you got to remember what he did with Cooper Kupp in particular when he had those sort of peak premium years. Liam Cohen and his system was a part of that. It's Chris Godwin's occupying that area of the field. I'm not fading Mike Evans. Mike Evans is a big red zone threat, and he's going to get a lot of touchdowns. That's kind of his game. But I think you're going to see a lot of volume dependency on Chris Godwin. So I quite like him at the value he's kind of going in right now. Derek Henry, I think, is a steal. People don't like the age, and I get it. He's 30-odd, but the geezer's never had a significant injury. So I'm quite keen to scoop him up in fourth round of drafts. I'm not really bothered about the age on him. Yes, he's only got a couple of years, but I think the price is really good. If I'm looking at rookies in particular,
I think he's also gone to a decent landing spot for him.
That's what I mean.
Progress in a few more years as well.
They're a team that are going to run the football heavily, right? That's what they do. Yeah. And yes, okay, he's going to lose a few carries to Lamar Jackson, and that's fine. I actually think he was over carrying the ball. So I don't actually think that's a bad thing. Yeah. You know, volume is really important, but actually taking away some elite volume for elite performance is also a really good thing. People like Zeke in the past were overworked, and then that absolutely drowned their volume. Tony Pollard, he got an increased volume and actually got worse, because certain players just can't handle that kind of volume. Yeah. You know, you can run the legs off these players. So actually taking away some of their volume. Well, Alexander Mattison's just a guy who can't run more than 2 yards in front of him. So that's going to be a forever challenge for someone of that limited skill set. But I think I look at those sorts of players and I think, okay, they're really players I want to scoop up because I think the value is so, so good. Now, I think all those players will rise. I think all those players will rise significantly once we know what's going on in San Francisco. Those players will rise. I think people will cotton on to Chris Godwin. He will rise. I think Derek Henry, people will just think, actually, this geezer's balled out for so many years. He will rise up. to be where he is. So I think right now they're really good values. And I think you're going to see good values all the way through. I love Brian Robinson Jr. was a huge value last year. And because he got injured, I think he's going to go under the radar again. He's going to be a huge value again this year in a Cliff Kingsbury offense. Yeah, I'm scooping that. I think he's going to be great value. If I look at rookies, because I know we want to talk a little bit about rookies, there's certain players who I think are absolute steals and certain players who I think are absolute fallers. So, like, I look at Ricky Pearsall, right, who I think is going in the second round of rookie drafts. So I think he's an absolute steal because effectively one of Aiyuk or they told us when they picked him in the draft that one of those players is going. Whether they go now, whether they go at the start of the season, whether they go in February, one of those players is going off Samuel and Aiyuk. Most likely Aiyuk if it doesn't happen before the season. But we know one of those players is going. So Pearsall is the heir apparent to one of those two players, most likely Aiyuk. That tells me everything I need to know. They've already drafted the replacement. He's already in the building. And he's a second-round rookie pick. Yeah, I'll scoop him up everywhere. So I think he's a huge value. I think AD Mitchell, who I love, he's a player who's absolutely polarizing as a prospect. Now, I get his combine wasn't great, but people put too much stock in the combine.
DK Metcalf had a horrific
combine. I mocked his 3-cone time. Because it was horrific. I said, so oil tankers move faster than DK Metcalf. He's made me look stupid. But these players do. You know, I think AD Mitchell, his physical profile, he's on a great team. You know, and Anthony Richardson, who I don't think is a great NFL quarterback. But I'm a Florida Gator and I love Anthony Richardson. But he probably throws the best deep ball of anyone outside of the elite quarterbacks. And I think he's someone, you know, if anything, he overthrows that ball. Like, he's got a cannon. And I think, you know, him and AD Mitchell, because Pittman, that's not his game. So I think having AD Mitchell there with Richardson, I think it's a great fit. I think I can really see good value coming out of him. I love Roman Wilson. No one else does. But the Steelers draft
all the time,
right? They don't miss on wide receivers very often. You know, they've plucked guys like Antonio Brown, Deontay Johnson. You know, they pluck these guys out and they got rid of Deontay Johnson. You know, there's space on this roster. Yeah, I don't think it's a quick fix, but I think he's someone who will increase and get value quite quickly. Roman Wilson, I really like him.
My thoughts on Roman Wilson are two things are guaranteed. He's going to be brilliant for at least 2 years. And then in about 2.5 years, we're going to find out he's an absolute psychopath because that's what the Steelers like at wide receiver. So,
I think the Steelers have finally got it right. Right? They've not had a quarterback since Ben Roethlisberger fell off the wheels. You know, and I know it's popular to mock Russell Wilson, right? I know it's fun. I get it. But actually, last season, he wasn't that bad. He wasn't great. I'm not sitting here saying that Russell Wilson should have won the MVP. Far from it. He wasn't great. But he wasn't that bad. He's a heck of a lot better. You know, you got to remember what they've been trucking out there for the last couple of years. Like, it's been horrific. I actually think that just having a steady veteran presence who can actually throw the football and make plays, he's going to have a decent offense to work with, Russell Wilson. I think he's going to be a lot better than people will expect him to be. He signed for basically free. It's all wheels up for him to work. I think with Roman Wilson, with Pickens, I think that's a really good, attractive offense. You can probably buy a lot of really good pieces there quite cheap. I don't think anyone's really jumping out to go and acquire Steelers players. So you go back to value. I think almost all the Steelers players are value in their own right. I think Wilson's a value. I think Warren's a value. I think the wide receivers are a value. I think everyone on that offense, I think Freeman's a value. I think everyone on that offense is a value because they're all going to be really cheap because no one's going to be buying that offense. Yeah. But they're going to be significantly maybe not better just than Fields. Wow. I don't think Justin Fields is an NFL quarterback. I've said that historically. I remember all this thing about he was going to go for a second round pick. And I was like, no one is paying a second round pick for Justin Fields, right? You've got 3-4 years of tape of Justin Fields. You have a guy who over his career has not managed to complete better than 54% of his passes. You've got a guy who's thrown for almost as many interceptions as he has touchdowns. People like Justin Fields because he puts up fantasy points. And people need to escape this reality that if you put good fantasy points up, that doesn't make you a good player. Jameis Winston was an elite fantasy football quarterback. The geezer threw 30 touchdowns. In the season, he finishes the quarterback 3 through 30 touchdowns. Like, that doesn't make you good. That just makes you like a stat box anomaly, right? And ultimately, Justin Fields is not good enough. Like, there was talk about him being used in the special teams unit. And I'm like, that is perfect. That is his skill set.
Kick return. Put him on kick return.
All day long. Why not? I think I know people are mocking that, but I sit there and think that's actually quite a good way to get an extra player on your roster. And I actually think he has some attributes that I think can work in the NFL, but him throwing the football is not one of them. And I'm not trying to like hate on him and hate players, and I'm not for that, but he's not good enough to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. And that's 4 years of tape. It's not like, oh, give him a chance. Like, he's had a chance. He had a longer chance than Trey Lance. He had a longer chance than Sam Darnold. Like, there's a lot of players who deserve chances and didn't get them. And then we go, oh, it's the landing spot. Well, he had 4 years. Players have bad landing spots, and ultimately they've been drafted because they're picking at the top of the board. They get better, you know, and ultimately that is how you get measured. I mean, even Mac Jones had a better career than Justin Fields.
The funny thing with Justin Fields is I agree with most of what you just said, pretty if not all of what you just said. But if the Panthers hadn't have been that bad last year, he'd probably be the starting quarterback for the Bears this year. It's just they would have stuck with him and gone with it.
Quite possibly. And that's what's crazy. But you know, they got the worst owner in the NFL, the Panthers, and they make terrible mistakes. By the way, I wanted to go on to values, just a few more rookies, because I think...
Have you got time for this? Because
I've got time. We can keep chatting
to you for a while, so...
I've got time, it's all right. By the way, I think Ben Sinner in Washington is a huge value. A everyone likes him, but listen, he's going to have that job sooner rather than later. The one I absolutely love, and again, I'm a homer, and people are going to think, oh, this guy's just a homer, is... Bucky Irving, right? Yeah. I love Bucky Irving. Again, another player who tested really badly at the combine, but he has a really unique skill set that he's going to just go into spaces and create plays. And he's going to be the sort of player the Bucks love. And they get it's a different offensive coordinator, but they love wide receiver screens. And they tried to get Rashad White out there. It didn't really kind of work. But effectively, the Bucks over the entire reign of Todd Bowles has always been to try and get a player out in the flat on a screen to get big yardage. These sort of high completion plays that can break off chunk yards. And the Bucks have always made the completion, but they never seem to get the yards off it. And I think they've brought in Bucky Irving to be this utility tool for end arounds, for these creative plays, catch the football out of the backfield. I think you're going to see Bucky Irving do a lot. He's going to be a bit like a Devon Achan for Miami, for the Buccaneers. I think Liam Cohen is a surprisingly very underrated offensive coordinator. You know, he did two head coaching stints at Kentucky, and he's responsible for the two highest touchdown scoring seasons in their school history. and like that. You know, he had a great scoring season with the Rams. The guy is a very intelligent mind. He's still quite young. He knows Baker already. They already have that familiarity, which is good. So you already have some pieces there together that, like, you have Chris Godwin's going to fit this role that he's got for this sort of elite slot receiver kind of space. They're going to have Jalen McMillan, I think, is going to take some of those carries in the slot. But I think Bucky Irving's just going to be a really exciting fun fantasy player. He's going to be the sort of player that is going to be hard to start in leagues, but in best ball, I think he's phenomenal. I'd scoop him up in every best ball league because he's the sort of guy that will break off 30-point weeks. He'll also score zero, but he will score. He will have that high ceiling, very, very low floor. and there will be very little in between. It will either be boom or bust. So the best ball, you don't have to worry about it. But I'm just scooping him up in dynasty leagues, and also because he will beat out Chase Edmonds and be the backup. So if something happens to Rashad White, then you've That's got the next guy up, which is highly possible. If you want a real bargain basement player, Theo Johnson is one. So we think Darren Waller's probably going to retire.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's going to be a straight shootout for the starting role there. Might not get it, but since he's going to cost you, you know, less than nothing.
I think Darren Waller's going to make that decision anytime soon, because he seems to have been talking about it for about 3 months.
Let's put it this way. If he doesn't make it, then he'll obviously stay, but his body is so crippled that even if he plays, he's not making the season anyway.
I made the point a few weeks ago that he's due $18 million this year.
I can see him playing and getting hurt. You have to look at it and go. But the thing behind the scenes, right, when you retire, there is a way that the team will still pay you out a significant portion of that. You know, there's a lot of deals done behind the scenes. You know, it's the cap is one of the most misunderstood aspects of the NFL, right? So I love it when people say, "Oh, well, the Cowboys are already paying Zeke this year, and now they're paying him again." Then they're not. Yes, on the cap, i.e., an accounting sheet. Yes, technically they are. But they already paid him. That money's in Zeke's account. He's got that. He's probably spent it on spoons, right? Whatever. It's big cereal bowls. That money's gone, right? That's what's come out of play. That's it. It's done. So they're not paying him. So, like, when I read reporting, it's like, oh, he's already being paid for this year. And no, he's not. He's been paid. It's the same way that when a player gets cut, that's all been paid. All that money, you know, what is put out in actual money versus what is on a balance sheet. The balance sheet is just for rules. It's just effectively it's rules based money. It doesn't actually, none of that money's really all that important. It's like the thing with contracts. Oh, so-and-so signed a $120 million contract. You look at the guarantee, it's like 42 million. Like Josh Jacobs, everyone's like, Josh Jacobs' contract's amazing. Yeah, he could be dumped for this year for like next to nothing.
I was looking at his contracts for some reason the other day, and I was like, that couldn't be any more of a 2-year deal if it tried. It's like,
one-year deal.
It's in the team's interest to get rid of him before 2026. So
exactly that.
Like, he's not going to be there in 3 years' time.
Which again, you look at a player like Lloyd, right? And Lloyd is going to be, again, is another player. He's a huge value, Marshawn Lloyd. Because, you know, I think he's, what, the RB5, RB4 in fantasy rankings. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, he's kind of like level par with Blake Corum. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, I really don't want Blake Corum. In fact, Blake Corum, I think, is above him. I'm like, I don't want Blake Corum with a barge pole. Like, I will take zero Blake Corum anywhere. Like, he's not going to be on any of my rosters anywhere.
I'm just busy crossing players off my list while you're talking.
Because everyone's sitting there like, well, the Rams have, you know, they change running back every year, and you know, every year they go different running back. You know, they have Todd Gurley and they let Todd Gurley go, and then they got Cam Akers, and then Cam Akers all of a sudden was not a thing, and then he went, and now they got Kyron Williams, and he's going to go because he didn't get that higher draft capital. You know, Kyron Williams had one of the best unexpected seasons at running back we've seen in a long time, and you sit there and you think, they are not going to get rid of him. And you know how we know they're not going to get rid of him? Because they drafted the same running back. It's the same guy. Literally, you could take the jersey off of Williams, put Corum on it, and it's the same bloke.
Yeah.
They didn't draft
a different type of player. I was so high on Corum until the start of this. Until the draft. And now I'm like, I can't.
No.
I quite like the Denver Broncos one, who I think is, he's one that's sort of creeping under the radar.
Estimate's great. Because the thing with Estimate, right, and he's going below Davis, which I don't get. But I don't mind Davis because he's an injury away, right, from Cook. But Estimate, right, we kind of already know what we think about with these running backs in Denver. So, yeah, there's a lot of them. There's three other guys. Javonte Williams is on the way they're being finished. Right. He's had these multiple injuries. He is as done as can be, right?
Yeah, agree.
Smarty P Ryan's like 82, and he's gonna be done in like no time, right? And I like Janelle McLaughlin. I actually think he's a really fun, talented back in some ways, but his skill set is extremely limited. And I'm sitting there with Estimate, and I haven't managed to get Estimate any drafts. But I sit there and think, actually, I quite like him in formats because he's quite cheap. Yes, it's a messy situation, but that situation will clear up in a year. So I think if you can hold Estimate, put him on a taxi squad, I think he's got a good case to be the number two back there before the end of the season, maybe sooner. And then he's just sitting there waiting for those all to fall apart. They've got three very flawed running backs, one who's very limited in skill set, one that's just old and is pretty much done, and Javonte Williams, who's never going to reach what he should have done because of all those injuries.
Yeah.
So it's a great opportunity. So I like Estimate. It's a great call. Like, I think you look at some of these players and you think, this is actually a much deeper class than I gave it credit for 12 months ago. I wasn't really all that excited about it. I wasn't excited about the running backs at all. But actually, I'm more excited about it. The wide receiver class was always going to be good. There's always like lots of talented receivers here. And the quarterback class is surprisingly not that bad. I don't think it's elite. I think you've got a couple of players who potentially can do quite well. But, you know, I think actually you look at this and there's probably three good rounds of talent here, which I don't think anyone was really saying 12 months ago. You know, I think there's some really good like players. Like if I look into round four, like Vidal, I think is someone who I think is a great value. Again, he's stuck behind the Gus Bus and J.K. Dobbins. J.K. Dobbins is done. Like, he's one injury away from collecting a set of steak knives, I think, or something like that for all the injuries that he gets. And I love the Gus Bus. Like, I scooped him up in so many places in Dynasty, like, towards the end of last season, thinking he was going to get a move, and I didn't expect this. I did a startup, and I took Gus Edwards in, like, the 24th round, and I'm absolutely delighted because it's just absolutely smashed out of the park. But I look at Vidal. I think he could easily be one of these guys. And the Chargers have always been an organization where they tend to get something out of their late round guys. So I think there's so many really interesting players in this draft. And it is a deep draft. There's a lot of really interesting players the further you go down. So I think it's going to be a fun year. I think, you know, for me, if I was having my time again, I probably wouldn't have traded away as many rookie picks to try and win some titles last year. I probably would have held some back.
As long as you won the title, it's all right. It's when you trade them away and you don't win them.
There's a couple I didn't. There's a couple I did, and there's a couple I didn't.
Just one, right? I know you've got to go, so I'm just going to ask you one more on the rookie rank, which, you know, we've talked a little bit rookie. So on the Fantasy Pros Superflex, they've got Williams and Daniels 1 and 2 ahead of any of the wide receivers. Do you agree with that, or does that surprise you?
No, I don't think it surprises me, but so this is, again, this is this classic fantasy football versus other world of, so I actually don't rate either of these quarterbacks. But I think in Superflex, like, both these guys are going to give you significant options. So I love the fact they've been drafted 1 and 2. That helps. I think you look at Daniels, both of them have got that sort of scramble ability, plays with their legs, and that's kind of what you need out of a fantasy football quarterback these days. I think that's why you have to put them over Marv in a super flex league, because they are potentially, so what, here's a little insight for you. I did some projections for the Fantasy Cares Eliminators, right? And it's crazy scoring, but this will blow your mind when I give you the numbers on this. I have Jaden Daniels as my quarterback 4 in that format.
Okay.
Because of that rushing ability I expect from him. So I only have him behind Jackson, Hurts, and Allen. I have him ahead of Mahomes.
Okay.
And that is just, that's a stupid, crazy format. I'm not going to go in and explain the Eliminator format because it's,
but effectively,
it's time bad. Yeah. It's heavy rushing, right? So,
yeah.
You know, I expect Daniels to shoot up over a lot of players in that format. But I actually think, I look at this, I think Daniels would be the highest scoring rookie quarterback. That's kind of where I see of all the quarterbacks this year, and then we'll see what happens going forward. You know, but if I was to tell you now who I actually think will have the best NFL career of all those, don't be surprised if it's JJ McCarthy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think JJ McCarthy could have the best NFL career. If we look back at this 5 years from now or 10 years from now, and we say, which of these quarterbacks was sort of the best success? I would not be shocked to see JJ McCarthy. Also wouldn't be too shocked to see Michael Penix Jr. to be slightly better off.
I'm not going to let you go then without asking you a little bit more about Caleb Williams. So you don't think he's the second coming of Andrew Luck?
No, I don't. I think, listen, I've been wrong in evaluations of quarterbacks before. I will also say that it's got absolutely nothing to do with his physical traits or abilities. I think that the way that he has conducted himself in this process from the available information that we have makes me question, is he a guy who is a strong, born leader who people are going to get behind? Does he have that winnability factor, which is the part that's the intangible, right? Yeah. Now, I look at, and there's so many great players, even great quarterbacks, that don't have this, right? Aaron Rodgers is at the very top of this list. Aaron Rodgers is an elite quarterback who are, and people now are going to be throwing stuff at this. But Aaron Rodgers, for all of that elite talent and is the, you know, multiple MVPs, has one Super Bowl appearance. All right, he has a ring. Fair play to him. But Eli has two. Like, Eli's ability to compete and win is far superior. And I know people say, oh, it was the defense. It was. But Eli's talent in comparison to, you know, to Aaron Rodgers's, they're so far different. But that intangible that can't be measured, that winability, that inner strength, the gut, you know, you talk to any one of Eli's teammates, they would have run through a literal brick wall for him. And I don't think anyone, there are that many people on the Aaron Rodgers camp that would say the same. You can tell the way they structure their contracts. Aaron Rodgers takes a huge deal that actually takes away from the rest of the team. You know, it's why they can't compete. You know, and fair play, look, I'm not questioning it. Like, at the end of the day, he's got to eat, he's got to earn his money. It's a short career. He's put his body on the line. I'm not making a judgment. It's just I don't think Aaron Rodgers is a serial winner. I don't think Drew Brees is a serial winner. I don't think I look at the, whereas I look at someone like Ben Roethlisberger, serial winner. That guy would compete and he's just, and I'm not saying they're not competitive, but they just had that intangible. I don't think Caleb Williams has that. I think JJ McCarthy does. And that's why, and I think Michael Penix does. I look at the way that they carry themselves, the way that they talk, the way that their teammates, their coaches, and everyone talks about them. And you hear people talk about Penix and you hear people talk about McCarthy. And I just feel like I want to go and have a beer with those guys. Like, they're the guys I want to be surrounded around. You get all these talks about Caleb Williams isn't interviewing with this team because he doesn't think that they're going to be, that he's going to get drafted by them. Or, you know, he's not willing to do this workout. His pro day couldn't be bothered because he's like, I'm going one overall. Like, I just think all that kind of stuff doesn't say you're setting a standard that you're going to be the best you can be every time you go out there and do something. It's kind of like he wants it a bit easy.
Yeah.
He could prove me wrong. And he absolutely, in the range of outcomes, could absolutely be a Hall of Famer. But from everything I've seen, I don't see that. I don't see that winnability that I see in other players in his class, like Penix, like JJ McCarthy. And that's where I think, in an organization like the Bears, who have struggled historically for years, they have not been a team that have had much success in the last 20 years. And you need a whole culture reset, and you need a lot of guys to really build that culture up and set the tone. I'm not sure he is that guy. I think if he goes into a great culture, he will do very well. But to build that culture, that's a question mark. And that's kind of why I don't think I've got him there. Daniels is purely on physical ability. Like, I think he has a very limited ceiling. And I think the way that he plays the game, he's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that's it. I think he's going to get hurt. And I think once he takes a few too many hits, that I think his career is going to be relatively short. And it's a horrible thing to say and project, but that's kind of, if I'm sitting there looking at this 10 years from now, yeah, I could easily see.
Well, we've seen it happen before. I mean, obviously, yeah. as a Colts fan, you saw it happen with Richardson last year. But sure. even if you look at the MVP, like how many years have we lost of Lamar Jackson over the last few years? Because he the way he plays, he's going to get hurt a little bit more. So.
And I think it's very similar to Robert Griffin III. You know, it's these sorts of players, unfortunately. They get these hits, they get this dent of confidence, and anything can happen. And it's just, it's unfortunate, but that's the sport. And these pocket passers, as much as they're not as much fun for fantasy football, they're the guys who have the long careers. Look at Tom Brady. You know, these guys who know how to not take hits, they're the guys that last.
Yeah, and then you see right. Josh Allen taking hits and Sean McDermott going absolutely mental on the sidelines.
He's a big man, though. He could take it.
He can. It's like Cam Newton. Like, you wouldn't want to go against Josh Allen or Cam Newton in a bar fight, would you?
Don't mention Cam Newton on this podcast.
No,
you can mention Cam Newton as much as you like.
Cam Newton had bailed out of Florida because he couldn't hack it. Yeah.
On that note, I said we were going to be no more than an hour. We're about 23 minutes over at this point, so I'm going to wrap it up, Murph. I could have sat here and listened to you chat all night. Appreciate you joining us on the podcast. Remind everybody where they can find you.
Well, thanks for having me, boys. I'm happy to come back anytime.
More than welcome back.
You can find
one
me...
episode is not enough.
Well, I don't know. I've just trashed Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, so probably no one wants me back anymore.
I don't mind that.
You can find me. You can interact with me on Twitter at 5 Yard Rush. Might be a bit slow. I've taken a bit of a break from Twitter, but I do activate and get on there every now and again. You can find my articles at Fantasy Pros. I haven't written on there for a couple of months, but I will be going back there once I finish the book. I also write for Pro Football Network during the season. So I wrote a load of stuff for them in the season. Mostly it's like injury updates and what I think of certain players, like on a Sunday. It's kind of the remit, but I'll do some other stuff for them in the season as well. Find a podcast, 5 Yard Rush. You'll find it anywhere. You'll find me on Thursdays more often than not, unless life gets in the way. So yeah, you'll find me anywhere. I'm pretty easy to find. If you find my profile on Fantasy Pros, you'll get my email address and other ways to contact me on there. And that's it. But you probably don't need anything more, because this chat will probably be one that people have turned off by now and probably have forgotten that there's a bit of the end.
Yeah, not at all. This is the best.
I'm really fascinated.
They've ever listened to.
There's so much information that even we shut up for the best part of it.
Yeah, but I'm not sure how much of it was good or actually. Yeah,
no, it was good. It was really good.
Mate, I'm already expecting all of the social comments we're going to get about how it was great because they didn't have to listen to the three of us witter on for an hour. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. You are more than welcome back. We'd love to have you back later in the summer, mate. And, a little bit closer to the season and even when the season starts. It sounds like you've got quite a lot on when the season goes. But like I say, if you haven't already joined the Charity League, please get involved. It's a great charity, and every penny counts with all of those things, as we've said before. So thanks for coming on and give us a bit of a summary on that. You can find us at JMD Pod on all of your relevant socials. If you keep an eye out over the next couple of days, we have some big changes
coming from us
this week. So keep an eye on our socials, and that might be worth your while. And keep listening and look out for our next episode.
Cheers, guys. Thanks very much. Cheers again, Murph.
Thanks for having me.